Chapter 28, Concerning What Happened at Olantore. There was a sound of thunder. Yes, indeed, and that thundering sound came from quite near, and Christian and Big Tiger knew what it was. "Please forgive our bad manners," said Big Tiger hurriedly, but he was already halfway out the door, and in a trice both he and Christian were out under the trees. Naidong hurried after them, and they saw Good Fortune running down by the line of trees to the south. "There," cried Christian, pointing to a cloud of dust which was rolling over the Darisen pastures. "There he goes." "Is that your car?" asked Naidong. "It was our car," said Big Tiger dryly, "but now there's someone else sitting in it, and it can't be helped." Christian pulled Big Tiger by the coat and wanted to run after Good Fortune, but Big Tiger held him back. "The cow is gone from the barn," he said calmly. "It can't be so," cried Christian, but he stood still when he saw the cloud of dust racing toward the belt of trees and reaching it. They heard the fierce barking of a dog, and at the same time two shots rang out. They sounded faint, and the noise of the motor drowned their echo completely. "That was Good Fortune," declared Big Tiger. Then there was a slowly increasing roar, and Christian recognized the sound of the car coming to a difficult place, for there was a changing of gear. Thereupon, two more shots rang out, this time answered by two others, which re-echoed like rolling thunder from tree to tree. "That was Springtime Snake," Big Tiger explained. "The wretch!" raged Christian, and then all was quiet. The sound of the motor faded gradually away. "We must find Good Fortune," cried Christian, and this time Big Tiger ran off with him at once. A well-trodden path led from the yurt along the fringe of woodland. The branches of a tree hit Christian in the face, but he ran on, stumbled over a tree root, jumped up again, and Big Tiger overtook him. "It's nothing," cried Christian, and they both ran on. At last they saw Good Fortune sitting near a willow by the edge of the caravan road, where it sloped steeply downhill. Below, they could see water glistening. The black poodle was there, too, barking and whining, and Seven Stars came running along in bare feet. Christian forgot all conventional manners. "Are you wounded?" he shouted breathlessly from a long way off, but Good Fortune shook his head. He was staring alternately at the deep wheel marks down the slope, which became lost in the sand of the Narin Gaul, and at the cloud of dust which still hung in the air on the other bank. Then they all stood gasping for breath. The Narin Gaul was still a river. True, at the deepest part, the water hardly reached to one's knees, and there was scarcely any current, but it was a good 10 yards wide, and one could see from the steep banks that there might at times be high water. The ford of the caravan road was a bit wider still, and the slope of the banks seemed to have been artificially leveled at both sides. Nevertheless, it was hard enough going for a loaded truck. There were deep tire marks on the moist ground. The morning sun shone brightly on them, and the sad little party looked helplessly at their herringbone pattern in the sand. There was silence until Naidong arrived. He tramped through the bushes, and when he saw that there was nobody dead or wounded, he said sternly to Seven Stars, "Where did you leave your shoes?" "I took them off, Father," Seven Stars excused herself. "I was in such a hurry." Good Fortune turned his head. "You might ask instead where I have left my car." "If you like, I will," said Naidong, squatting on his haunches beside Good Fortune. "Where did you leave your car?" "It's gone," Good Fortune told him, "and there's no possible hope of getting it back."
"But there are rogues and scoundrels," he shouted suddenly. "There are swindlers and murderers, and I'll find them again, all right."
"Tinger metne," said Naidong solemnly.
"You're right," cried Good Fortune. "Heaven knows, but I know too. Hear me, you dogs and sons of dogs. Good Fortune will be on your tracks from now on." And he jumped up and shook his clenched fists in the direction in which the car and its dust cloud had long since disappeared. At Good Fortune's shouting, the poodle came bounding out of the water, growling, whereupon Good Fortune let his arms fall with a dejected smile. "Forgive me, all of you," he said, "for letting myself go like that and annoying you with useless words."
Hamaga, replied Naidong, we were pleased to hear it. This made Good Fortune feel still more ashamed, and Big Tiger asked quickly, who was in the car in which we had the honor of traveling formally? Who else but the two Redbeards, Affliction and Springtime Snake? Springtime Snake actually fired at me. Our revered elder also fired, Big Tiger reminded him. I was within my rights in shooting, Good Fortune defended himself. And anyway, the fellows were far away, but I saw Springtime Snake aiming at me. The side window of the car was broken. There must have been a struggle. I'll saddle four horses, suggested Naidong, and we'll go and see what the fellows have left. They left a half-lay merchant, said Good Fortune glumly, if they haven't killed him. You had someone with you? Inquired Naidong. He can't walk very well, said Good Fortune. That is why he remained behind in Olontore. We shall see how he's fared, said Naidong reassuringly. He walked off toward the yurt. Seven Stars disappeared with the poodle between the waving Derisen grass, and Christian took Big Tiger aside. I'd never have thought, he said, that Affliction was a Redbeard. You can only see people's skin and not what's under it, said Big Tiger. They followed Good Fortune and Naidong in silence. When they arrived at the yurt, Naidong was already on horseback, and now he fetched three more horses. Christian wanted to help saddle them, but Naidong said, let them alone. They won't like your smell, for they are Mongolian horses. They'll kick you. Can you ride? Yes, I can ride, said Christian, but his self-confidence vanished when he looked at the wild eyes of the horses, which had tufts of hair hanging over their foreheads. As soon as Christian came near them, their tails lashed the ground, and the more excited of them began to kick. We'd call those ponies in Peking, thought Christian, and he went and stood near Big Tiger, who was looking on at a safer distance while Naidong saddled. It was a lucky matter that Affliction and Springtime Snake had left all their riding equipment with Naidong, for he possessed only two saddles, one for himself and one for Seven Stars. Yabona! Cried Naidong when he was ready. Yabona! Answered Good Fortune gaily, and no one would have thought that he was a traveler who 10 minutes ago had lost his automobile. What'll we do with Compass Mountain? Asked Good Fortune. He's got a foreign smell. He says he can ride, replied Naidong, but he did not sound very convinced. He handed out four whips, and Good Fortune said to Christian, to fall from a camel isn't bad. To fall from a horse is worse, but the most dangerous thing is to fall from an ass. Therefore, you have a good chance of remaining alive, for the horse stands midway between the dangers. Nevertheless, said Naidong, one must be careful. He went into the yurt, brought back short reins, and then he chose an iron-gray piebald horse, which he led around in a circle a few times. He put the reins through the halter, held the horse's head down, and ordered Christian to put his foot in the enormous stirrup. As soon as you're up, keep a tight rein, he instructed him, and now off you go! The gray pony snorted when Christian approached it. It pranced excitedly and wheeled around when he tried to grasp the saddle. It's no good, cried Good Fortune from a safe distance. Be brave and nimble, whispered Naidong, holding the stirrup firmly. With one resolute leap, Christian was in the saddle. He grasped the reins, Naidong let go, and the horse flung out its hind legs straight in the air. But Christian knew what to do. With all his strength, he gripped the horn of the wooden Chinese saddle and pressed his knees against the animal's sides. Meanwhile, it was rearing and kicking at a pace which made Christian forget all the rules of horsemanship. When bucking and rearing proved useless, it tried leaping with all fours at once. Naidong looked on, cursing the horse and all its ancestors. Good Fortune was proud of Christian's courage, but Big Tiger was getting really scared. Suddenly, the gray horse stretched out its neck, and Christian was just in time to catch the reins, which had slipped from his hand, before the animal went off in a wild gallop through the waving Derisen grass. Big Tiger gave a loud yell, but Good Fortune laughed. Naidong raised his right thumb as a sign of the highest approval, for he saw that Christian was standing in the stirrups like a true Mongolian horseman and was letting the horse have its fling. As, in their wild dash, they neared the meadow in which the cows were grazing, Christian gradually shortened the reins and took his seat in the saddle, and that put an end to the dizzy ride. The horse continued to gallop a while longer, but then it fell into a trot, and by the time Christian circled back, horse and rider had agreed to put up with each other.
"Congratulations!" shouted Good Fortune, and Nidong raised both thumbs in a gesture of great respect. Nidong then took the remaining horse and led it by the bridle to Big Tiger. "There's nothing to be afraid of," he said. "Up with you." "But I've never been on a horse yet," said Big Tiger. "You have to begin sometime," Nidong explained. "This horse belongs to the soldier Affliction. It's a gated horse, and you will sit in the saddle as if you were in a horseless car." Big Tiger looked at the brown horse with the white star on its forehead, and the brown horse sniffed the new rider and pawed the ground impatiently. It snorted when he mounted, but then was pleased to find its load light. The other three trotted on in the regular trot, which Mongolian horses can keep up indefinitely, but the brown horse kept up a swinging gait. Nidong said that the animal would fetch a big price, and one could buy at least two ordinary horses for the money. "Now," he said, "the horses belong to you, the one on which Good Fortune is riding, and Big Tiger's brown one." They rode at a walk through the wood, on account of the many roots of trees, and finally came to the poplar which leaned across the road. "The murderous beast was sitting up there," said Good Fortune, pointing with his whip. "What kind of?" Nidong began to ask, but he got no farther, for Big Tiger shouted, "Here's someone coming!" They all looked toward the clearing and saw a man running in their direction. Though he was still a long way off, it was plain that he was exhausted, for he was stumbling and stopping for breath and then staggering on. "It's Affliction!" cried Christian. "The Redbeards are becoming good people," said Good Fortune, shaking his head. "How comes that?" "We'll soon find out," said Nidong, urging his horse forward. It began to trot, then to gallop, and the other horses galloped after him. When they stopped in front of Affliction, there was a big cloud of dust. Pebbles were flying, hoofs were stamping, and Affliction fell on his knees. "I am innocent," he wailed. "I did nothing wrong, but a crime has been committed." "We know it," said Good Fortune sternly. "Stand up." "I'm sorry," cried Nidong, dismounting and raising up the disconsolate soldier. "Don't be downhearted. We all know you are an honest man. But tell us, what happened in Olantore?" "You're wounded," cried Good Fortune. "What happened?" "It's nothing," replied Affliction, but he turned pale and faint and had to sit down by the side of the road. His right hand and arm were wrapped in rags through which blood was oozing. Good Fortune jumped down from his horse. Christian and Big Tiger jumped down too, and Nidong tied the reins together. "It seems there's been some nasty work," said Good Fortune. "Never in my life have I met such wickedness," said Affliction faintly. "All the misfortune came from that green coat whom you brought to us."
"Green coat?" cried Nidong, shocked. "Was green coat here?"
"He was here, and now he's gone," said Affliction.
"Show me your arm," cried Good Fortune hurriedly. "We must first know what state you were in."
Affliction undid the rags. His five fingers were cut, and across the forearm was a gaping wound, which was still bleeding.
"Is the artery severed?" asked Christian.
"No, it's all right, or at least not much open," said Good Fortune. "Try if you can move your fingers, Affliction."
"I can," said Affliction, spreading them out.
"Then you're a long-lived man," Good Fortune said reassuringly. He bound the blood-stained rags around the wound again, because there were no others, and then they all sat in a circle around Affliction.
"Tell us everything," Nidong requested. "When you went away," Affliction began, "I opened the cans and filled the empty drums with gasoline, and Springtime Snake said, 'What's the good of hurrying? There's no need to,' so he remained sitting in the tent with Greencoat."
"And Greencoat?" asked Nidong again. "What's happened to him?"
"I thought to myself," continued Affliction with difficulty, "now they're conversing about many things, and Springtime Snake will tell them to me afterwards, and for a long while we won't need to quarrel." I had already filled two drums, when Springtime Snake came out of the tent, and Greencoat came too, and suddenly he was no longer lame, but perfectly sound. "Are you finished?" asked Springtime Snake, and when I said, "No, I'm not," Greencoat shouted, "You're a lazy, good-for-nothing fellow!"
"He needs a helping hand, for he's not strong," said Springtime Snake, in my defense. Then they loaded up many cans and threw the two drums that were still empty off the truck. Greencoat brought the sleeping bags and the fur coats belonging to the two young gentlemen, and then Springtime Snake said, "We'll go a bit of the way to meet them."
He fetched his gun and all his belongings out of the tent, and then I saw more or less what he had in mind. I said, "No, that won't do. Mr. Good Fortune will be back here when it's time to come back. Stay where you are. You might miss him on the way." "All the better for him," said Springtime Snake. "Otherwise, I'll have to shoot a hole in his belly." Thereupon, Greencoat started up the engine, and I shouted to Springtime Snake, "So that's what you're up to! Out with you!" But he slammed the door. Then I jumped onto the running board of the truck, which was already moving, for Greencoat had got in behind the wheel. I smashed in the window and caught Springtime Snake by the collar, but Greencoat took up a whip and hit out at me. I fell into the bushes and remained lying there, and for a long time I knew nothing more. Then I started running, for I wanted to find you. More I do not know. "But Greencoat," asked Nidong obstinately, "what about him?" "I'll tell you," declared Good Fortune. "As I was coming out of Hui Lai Xian, this man, Greencoat, was standing by the roadside. He kowtowed to me and said, 'Please, please take me with you.' So I picked him up, as people must help each other. I thought he was an honorable person, but now I see he's a scoundrel." "He always was one," said Nidong. "Did Dogalong and White Stone not tell you about him?" "Dogalong left in the night while I was asleep. Only these two young night watchmen spoke to him." "Did he not warn you against Greencoat?" asked Nidong. "Yes, he warned us," Christian admitted, "and Bator also told us we should look out." "And we did look out," Big Tiger continued, "and we found out that he stole a lot of cartridges from our respected elder." "No doubt he did that," said Christian, "because even then he was planning to steal the truck, and he didn't want to get shot in doing so." "But he hadn't any cartridges," cried Good Fortune. "I searched his clothing down to the seams." "The cartridges were elsewhere," Big Tiger explained, diving into his pocket. "Compass Mountain found them last night when he went out to the truck with the lantern. I trust it will please our respected elder to identify his property." "But why," cried Good Fortune, "did you not tell me that at once? At least I would have shot Greencoat before sunrise." "We were forbidden even to cough," Big Tiger recalled. "For that reason," continued Christian, "we were as silent as goldfish in a bowl." "Ah," shouted Good Fortune, "there's a time to speak up and a time to be silent. You didn't know the right time. May the venerable chief cut off that scoundrel Greencoat's head if he catches him, and Springtime Snake's, too."
"Tinger metne," said Nidong solemnly.
"Yes, indeed," sighed Good Fortune. "Heaven knows. Yesterday evening I wanted to send Greencoat packing. If only I had done so." "Yabona," cried Nidong, standing up. "It's not good to sit in one place as long as you can ride." "And what about this man?" asked Good Fortune.
"I'll walk slowly behind you," said Affliction.
"That won't do," cried Nidong. "You need care. My yurt is near, and Seven Stars is still nearer. Let her dress your wound. She knows how to."
"Thanks 10,000 times," murmured Affliction, standing up and beginning to walk, but he reeled alarmingly.
"Don't hurry," Good Fortune called back to him, "and don't move your arm."
Affliction nodded. Then Good Fortune mounted his horse. Big Tiger was already up, and Christian, merrily crying, "Yabona," tapped the piebald on the neck, and it neighed responsively. When they arrived at Olantore, the place lay peacefully bathed in sunshine. The blue tent stood there, its entrance open, and the smoke of the dying fire curled like a thread to the roof. In front of the shrubs, the empty tin cans lay about in confusion. The two iron drums had rolled away a little. Near them were some pieces of broken glass, and at one place there were drops of blood in the sand.
"The scoundrels!" raged Good Fortune as he tied his horse to a little tree. Then he followed Nidong into the tent. It was pretty well cleared out. Big Tiger's and Christian's sleeping bags had disappeared, and so had the fur coats. The beautiful new paraffin lamp no longer hung from the tent beam, and Good Fortune searched in vain for his padded military coat. The little sack of precious rice was gone, too.
"If only we'd taken the honey cakes," sighed Christian.
"And the sheep cheese, too," said Big Tiger. "I got to like it."
"No use opening the umbrella after it has rained," said Good Fortune, seating himself on the few felt covers that were still left.
"I'm not so depressed, really," he continued. "Is it not a burning shame to sit uneasily in a horseless car as long as one can ride?"
"You're right," agreed Nidong. "It is good to know these horseless cars, but it is better not to use them. They make a man restless of mind and uneasy of heart." He drew a long pipe out of his boot, poked in the fireplace until he found an ember, and began to smoke. "Let's take back affliction's belongings," he said. "Bolna," cried Christian. "We'll tidy up a bit meantime." He went out with Big Tiger to collect the empty gasoline cans into a heap. Half of the full ones were still left. They spread the tent cloths over them, and when that was done, Nidong brought out Affliction's gun, coat, and a few other oddments. Then they all rode back the way they had come. They found Affliction sitting on the threshold of Nidong's yurt. His arm was in a broad white sling, and he was still pale. The black poodle lay beside him, but when it saw the riders coming, it jumped up and ran barking toward Nidong. Nidong let his reins drop, and the poodle took hold of them and led the horse to the front of the yurt, only letting go when Nidong had dismounted and said, "Good dog." Seven Stars came out and greeted the guests. She had made a good fire, prepared noodles, and laid the cushions around the hearth. Nidong nodded with satisfaction, but still there seemed to be something missing, for he murmured again and again, "If I only knew, it's sad not to know," and he shook his head. "I don't know either, father," Seven Stars assured him. "Perhaps I might know," Good Fortune intervened, but Nidong laughed and said he should not rack his brains, because what they were looking for was as lost for good as a day gone by. Then they all sat down. Good Fortune had to accept the place of honor, though he protested energetically and swore that he was a bad and worthless person who had been guilty of great negligence. "Hamaga," Nidong cheered him, "there's no great harm in an undeserved change of possessions," and he began to serve the noodles. After the meal, Nidong said he was a bad host, for the drink of honor which he owed his guests was unfortunately not available. He was quite certain that there were several goatskins full of excellent milk brandy tucked away somewhere, but where these precious skins had got to, no one knew, and it was very sad. "Have you had thieves here, too?" asked the unsuspecting Affliction. "It's not that," replied Nidong, "but there are things which disappear without being stolen. On New Year's night, for instance." "Why precisely then?" asked Good Fortune. "Because I'm not at home at the New Year. I have to ride away." "Of course," said Good Fortune. "One has to ride away at that time. Everyone knows that. When I come home, there's not a drop of arak left. And my wife says we had a lot of guests, and they drank all the skin bags empty. But that isn't true. For every time I'm away, she buries one or two skins." "She does that," Seven Stars explained, "so that we shall have a drink left for the spring festival." "That may be," admitted Nidong, "and your mother is a splendid woman, but we've got a feast to celebrate right now."
"What feast?" inquired Good Fortune.
"In my opinion," said Affliction, "it's just an ordinary unlucky day and not a feast at all." "For me," Nidong insisted, "it is a feast when such distinguished guests visit my wretched tent, and here we are sitting in the sea of sand where a man gets thirsty. It is sad not to know."
"Perhaps," Good Fortune suggested, "it would be a good thing to take a spade and dig a bit around where it looks as if a full goatskin would thrive."
But Nidong shook his head. "In the past," he said, "the spade helped, but that's over. My wife now hides the skins a long way off, and it is very sad."
"Hamaga," cried Good Fortune, "we don't need any arak. My car is gone. What's the loss of two goatskins of arak compared with that?"
"And they'll come back again," said Seven Stars reassuringly.
"And so will the car in the end," said Nidong.
"There's no chance of that," Good Fortune explained. "We set out on an unlucky day, on which the spokes fall from wheels. The inevitable was bound to happen. What else are calendars for?"
Nidong gave a few embarrassed coughs. "Let us continue where we were interrupted," he said.
"Bolna," cried Good Fortune, "tell us about the bamboo rods with the ancient writing on them."
"We wait patiently for enlightenment," said Big Tiger.
"Did you get back the book?" asked Seven Stars, astonished.
"It has come home from its long journey," said Nidong, and reaching behind him to the chest, he picked up the thin book with the silken cover. "In this book," he declared, "there were many blank pages. I therefore gave it to Nowhere at All, saying, 'Ask the old cousin of the king of the Sunnits to write down in this book all that is written on the bamboo rods. Thus we shall both learn what the people in ages past have thought.'"
The Mongolian script, said Good Fortune, deeply impressed, is a high art which few understand.
Does Mongolian writing look like Chinese? Asked Big Tiger.
What a silly idea, cried Good Fortune. If that were so, anyone could read it. The Mongols begin at the top on the east side, and when they get to the bottom, they begin at the top again. When the page is finished, it looks like a garden with graceful flowers and grasses in it. But only a very few great professors knows which way it goes and where the beginning or the end is. To know this, one must be a scholar of high rank. And saying this, he laid his hands on his breast and bowed to Nai Dong, who was visibly touched at being so honored.
There is unfortunately no question of scholarship, protested Nai Dong. I read what is written. Often I understand it, but more often I do not.
Your modesty exceeds the permitted limits, Good Fortune dissented.
We shall see, said Nai Dong, as he opened the book and began to read.